So Allison Sorry. Hannigan's still my favorite Hannigan.
But
she probably can't sing, would be my guess.
She cannot.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
is
no.
Is there? Oh, that's right. There was that one singing episode of. Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that now. I don't remember the details of it, but yes, I do remember that.
Yeah.
I do
remember that now. Quite clearly, she was the non-singer of that bunch.
Yeah. I'm Brian Faunin.
And I'm Court Winsett.
And we are
Listeners Like You. Well, Brian, so here we are, another day. For those of you that are new to our podcast, basically what we do is Brian and I are not creators of any sort. We don't create our own content. We're not musicians. We're not artistic in any way, but we do like to comment on other people's artistic endeavors.
Correct.
And so we have come up with this little platform that we can use to discuss things that one might hear, yeah. I think.
Some might say a podcast for listeners by listeners.
Exactly. And so one of the things that we do on a weekly basis is we assign something for the other person to listen to. And I've been making a concerted effort when it's my turn now for at least 1 week.
I was going to say, does 1 week qualify as a concerted effort? Show me concerted effort. Oh, God, big red X on the board.
To assign Brian, when it's my turn to assign Brian with something, I like to assign him with music mostly. But Brian has consumed a lot more music than I have, so it is very difficult for me to come up with something that he has not heard. But he has insisted that I must give him assignments that I have heard.
True.
So I tried that. We'll see how it goes. So that leads me to the question, Brian, have you listened to anything new lately?
I have. I listened to an album called For Everly, mm-hmm. which was a duet by Billy Joe Armstrong, lead singer of Green Day, and Norah Jones of Norah Jones.
Yes.
And we say it was new. It was new to me. I think it came out in like
2013.
Yeah, so it's 11 years old.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
So I listened to it. I do have thoughts. Thought one,
mm-hmm.
you may recall from our past episode, and listeners might recall, I asked the question, "Oh, is this a Everly Brothers cover or inspired thing?" And Court said, "No." It is.
Oh,
is it? Yes, it is. So For Everly is a redo of an Everly Brothers album.
A whole album?
That
didn't even know that.
But that was itself not Everly Brothers songs, but it was the Everly Brothers doing a bunch of traditional songs. And so all of the songs on this thing are like traditional songs that have existed and lots of other people did.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to it one time through. I cannot say I listened to it a second time.
Mm.
I listened to it on the road to Nashville. And it was interesting. It was nothing like Green Day.
No.
Obviously.
Yeah, definitely. It's also nothing really like
Norah Jones. Well, yeah. There was one song that's almost exclusively Norah Jones singing with a little bit of backup by Billy Joe Armstrong near the very end of the album. And that sounded to me like a Norah Jones song. But it didn't really sound like either one of them. It didn't sound like anything I was expecting. And I can't actually say that I really liked it. I didn't hate it. It was very interesting. But the fact that they were doing like covers of traditional ballads, it struck me almost like an old-timey country album at some level.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I sort of found most fascinating about it was, you know, you throw two things together in a mix, like, and you never know whether the one plus one will equal three, the one plus one will equal two. it just seemed so different than the sum of its parts. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know what to make of it, because it was like you could imagine a world in which Billy Joe Armstrong went in a completely different direction from what he did and did things like that, and he might be successful in certain endeavors and areas. But I was surprised that going into it in my head, I was like, well, as between these two people, I don't have any doubt that Norah Jones is the better vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of expected there'd be more Norah Jones singing, collaborating musically with Billy Joe Armstrong, and him sort of chiming in. And it really was more the more powerful voice in the mix, or the thing that sounded to be happening more frequently, was that Billy Joe Armstrong was sort of taking the lead, singing these old-timey songs, and Norah Jones was sort of collaborating, but that you heard more of his voice than hers. And mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah. So I will say that I had a very similar reaction to the reaction that you're describing to it the first time I heard it. I was super, super psyched when this album came out. Mm-hmm. And I had to have it. I went and bought it immediately, bought it on CD, because that's what I did back then.
Wait, you bought it? You bought an investment account that you couldn't touch for 6 months in order to? I don't understand how that works.
What is a CD? Yeah. I have no idea. And listened to it, and the first time I listened to it, I was like, okay, I don't know what I was expecting, but it mm-hmm. was not this,
right?
And I have over the years really tried to figure out what I was expecting,
mm-hmm.
and I still to this day could not tell you what I was expecting, but it's not.
Yeah, it's definitely not that, and I got to say, so I have a few more thoughts about it. So one is the "Who's Gonna Shoe Your Pretty Little Feet" song.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking creepy. I don't need that again. I know that's a traditional song they didn't write. They can't be held responsible for that. But boy howdy, the lyrics of that one, just that's a creepy ass song. Didn't like, don't do, please remove that. The other thing that was interesting to me was, while I was driving, the song that really grabbed my attention at first, and I'll explain why here in a second, but is this song called Barbara Allen. So the reason was, I hear Barbara Allen, I'm kind of paying attention to the lyrics, I'm starting to realize this is them doing covers of other songs. And in the back of my head, all of a sudden, and particularly the kind of lilt of the way he was singing right there, mm-hmm. let me tee it back up again just to put this in context. So he doesn't sound completely unlike Colin Malloy right there when he's singing.
Yeah.
And so there's a song called Barbara Allen that Colin Malloy does on a solo album. And so I made this mental note, when I get to my hotel room, I'm going to check, because it must be that what they're covering is the same old-timey song Barbara Allen that Colin Malloy covers, and that's a Judy Collins song, is the only thing I remember about that from the experience. So, sure enough, I get to my hotel room and I find the Colin Malloy song,
mm-hmm.
and I started up thinking, it's called Barbara Allen. There's no fucking way in the world there's two songs called Barbara Allen that exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seems fair?
Mm-hmm.
When the green leaves were swelling, that young Jimmy Gove of the West Country.
Even at that moment, I'm thinking, you know, I don't remember all the lyrics for sure, but that's probably it, and it's probably the same one, so I keep listening.
She sent his men into the town, to the place where she was dwelling. to my master dear. If your name be Barbary Allen,
okay, so at that moment, I do remember that he pronounces Barbara Barbary, and I don't know why, because he didn't go to law school, and so he never heard Barbary before ever. But you listen to the whole song. No, it's a completely different song.
Mm-hmm.
There's two songs in the world that are these old-timey songs called Barbara Allen, and they got absolutely nothing in common,
yeah.
Which was very frustrating. But it also reminded me, I like that one a lot better than I like the Billy Joe Armstrong, Nora Jones song. But, yeah, it's... It's an interesting album, but I also think, and I threw this out into the world in one of our earlier episodes, you know, that there's so much stuff out there and what makes to your attention is different every sort of time, but I'm more amazed these days when something gets recommended that's older and I hadn't heard it and I like it, mm-hmm. than some of these where I'm like, yeah, okay, that does exist, but now I know why it never really made it to my attention, mm-hmm. is it just, it doesn't have anything that truly, truly sort of grabs. And you can go read the Wikipedia page. It's an interesting story of how they got together and why they recorded this setup. But yeah, I'm glad for the experience, but I don't think it's an album I'll be revisiting.
Speaking of revisiting, I have actually been continuing on my journey with Valley Heat.
Oh, excellent! How far are you?
I've now listened to four.
Okay.
The episodes, so I'm still not very far.
Sure.
Very far in, but I do want to just point out that quite a bit of what you talked about when we were discussing that podcast, I should have been able to chime in better than I did, because I actually have gone back and listened to I didn't re-listen to episode one, but I went back and re-listened to episode two, and there was stuff that was just clearly I should have recognized what you were talking about and just
didn't.
Gotcha. So
well, it's a very layered show, and yeah. I you know. Even I, as I was trying to talk about it and was so excited about it, like I'd be forgetting people's names. I still can't remember what goes before Cephalopods or People, but the lead singer of Cephalopods People, he always says that name and sets that up. But anyway, it's a really, really good listen. And I don't want to turn this episode into a full greatest hits sort of deal where all we do is talk about things we talked about before. But I do want to acknowledge, do you know what this episode signifies, Mr. Winsett?
No, I don't.
This is our podiversary.
Oh.
This is episode 26.
My word.
We go one episode every 2 weeks. You do 26 episodes. You multiply by two. Oh, hold on. Checking my math. That's 52.
Okay. That is 52.
Just doing it in both directions. But yeah, that's 52. And that's the number of
weeks
in
a year.
And so we've made it a year.
Yes.
Which is... I think a surprise to both us in the room and everyone else not in the room. But yeah, what I did want to do, if you're okay with it, because the Billy Joe Armstrong Nora Jones, you know, duet collaboration,
mm-hmm.
Makes a very easy jumping off point, which is, and I've put myself out there about this in the past. I don't know if you had or not, but I put myself out there about how much I like when a lot of the bands that I like will then, you know, bring somebody in and they do very well of finding like the female sounding voice register tone to mm-hmm. offset the male sounding voice, and how that always sort of brings me in. And I like that idea of duets. And so I'm very curious, Court, do you have thoughts on some of the best male sounding, female sounding, or it doesn't even have to be limited to that. It can be other types of duets. But your one offs, your collaborations where folks that aren't in a band together work together to do something like Billy Joe and Nora did.
Oh, see, that is key. That is your stipulation there at the very end of your question. Aren't in a band together, because mm-hmm. some of the best duos/duets come from people that were
oh yeah
in
sure,
a band
sure, sure.
together. So like for instance
Oh, for instance?
Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely.
You know, or what's his name? Mick Fleetwood. I mean, right, obviously, they're all in Fleetwood Mac together.
Yeah.
And as pairings go, any two of those three people singing together is really some pretty phenomenal stuff.
Yeah.
But they're in a band together. So
we don't have to completely foreclose that. But yeah, there are other instances of that, a little more modern, like of Monsters and Men, right? Mm-hmm. That it's an Icelandic band. They were very, very famous for a short period of time, but very distinct male voice, very distinct female voice, works absolutely well together. Mm-hmm. The XX is another Iceland band, different sounding than of Monsters and Men, but it's that blend. But yeah, they're easier to grab because that's their whole oeuvre.
Yeah.
But like, so on Stevie Nicks, right? You could stay with Stevie Nicks, her and Tom Petty, Stop Dragging My Heart Around.
Dragging My Heart Around was on my list. And I recently went to a concert, Stevie Nicks concert, and she did that song.
Wait, is this a Tom Petty isn't dead?
No, no.
Did he show up?
He is legitimately passed away, unfortunately, because you know, listening to that song without him in there such a distinctive voice, you cannot.
Yeah. Did they have anybody try to even mimic, or did she just sing all the parts?
She just sang all the
parts.
I think
that's the smart.
I mean,
thing
she had backup vocalists that were chiming in for harmony and so forth, but she didn't have like a guy come out and sing with her or something.
I think that's the right call.
Although it would have been interesting because it was a dual concert. It was Stevie Nicks and Billy Joel.
Oh.
And so, you know, could have done it with Billy Joel.
Could have, but man, if I'm Billy, I don't want to do that. And if I'm Stevie, I don't want Billy to do that.
Yeah. So anyway, but Stop Dragging My Heart Around, certainly up there as far as things that come to mind. I would also say that, Islands in the Stream.
That is what we are. Kenny and Dolly.
Indeed. And then I'm going to throw something out there that we talked last week. We talked about guilty pleasures, and this is definitely a guilty pleasure of mine. I love this song, and I don't know why. It's Picture. It's Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And it's Kid Rock.
Yeah,
and,
I know, you know, right? Like, so.
But I do really like that song. Gotcha.
Well, Sheryl Crow brings a lot to the table, and so I guess you take Sheryl Crow, you subtract Kid Rock. I guess you still have enough there to make it worthwhile. But boy, Kid Rock does make that tough. Like, there was one where step Billy Joel in and have him sing Kid Rock's parts. I think we would all be a little more happy with that. Another one, by the way, that doesn't fit in this conversation because they are in a band together. But do you remember the Civil Wars?
Mm-hmm.
The husband and wife duo that had that one good album, Barton Hollow. They really sounded great, but I think they were dating, and then I think they broke up, and so I think that became the end of that band. Well, here's you got any others on your list before I throw some at you and see if you remember them?
I've got plenty on my list.
Hit me.
You know,
so far I've known everything you said except for that Kid Rock monstrosity.
You would recognize it if I played it for you. You would probably
sure. And
since you've been gone, my world been dark and gray. You reminded me of brighter days. I hoped you were coming home to stay.
But also, I think another one that we have mentioned many times on this podcast, because it's by today's standards, it's got such troubling lyrics.
Right. Baby,
it's cold outside.
Oh, baby, it's cold outside. I thought you were gonna have Kevin Spacey and Gina from The Mandalorian there, their duet that really went out of style super quick.
No, originally, obviously, Baby, It's Cold Outside was done by Dean Martin and Doris Day.
Yes,
it is always a duo of people, and many people have performed it over the years,
including New Girl. What's her name?
Zooey Deschanel. She did it with
Will Ferrell,
Joe Golev, I think.
Oh, okay, gotcha. By the way, people we've covered on the show before, interestingly.
You mean on Elf? Yeah, she did do it on Elf. She did it in in the movie Elf with Will Ferrell, but she also recorded a version of it with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Speaking of people that we've talked about on the show, and this is a Zooey Deschanel made me think of this because she and Ben Gibbard were an item for a while. Mm-hmm. There's a Feist and Ben Gibbard one-off song that's really, really quite good. If you haven't heard it, you should go look it up.
I have not.
You got any truly old? Well, I guess you have done a truly old timey. There's not much more old timey than Baby It's Cold Outside. Another one that we've covered on the show a good bit. Mm-hmm. If I say to you Elton John and Kiki D.
Oh, absolutely.
That is what song?
That is man. What is that? Don't go breaking my heart.
Yeah. Yes, Elton John and Kiki D. As far as I know, that's the only thing I've ever heard Kiki D do.
Yeah, I don't even know who Kiki D is, but I do like saying the name
Kiki D. Kiki D. Kiki D. Do what?
Kiki D.
Oh, Kiki D won the Australian, or no, was it New Zealand that did Bird of the Year? Mm-hmm. So Kiki D probably won that one year.
Well, the most recent winner of Bird of the Year was what is it called? Man, we actually bought the metal bird of it.
Yeah.
It was not just Bird of the Year, it was Bird of the Century.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I believe it was Big Bird. Big Bird won Bird of the Century.
Puteki Teki.
Puteki Teki. That's what it was, which Kiki D and Puteki Teki would be an interesting collaboration. And then we talked a little bit about Matthew Sweet on the show, the Girlfriend album that I like so much. Him and Susanna Hoffs did that album that was a one-off, kind of the same way Billy Joe and Nora did. But
I did not know that either.
Got any more for me to remember, sir?
Well, what about Up Where We Belong?
Oh, yeah. Jennifer Warnes and Joe Cocker.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's a good one.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then
there's a couple famous McCartneys.
Well, sure. Although
but they're not male-female.
Yeah. I mean, McCartney famously did one with Michael Jackson, and then they had a falling out when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles. All of the Beatles music, basically.
Yes.
And then he also did one with Stevie Wonder.
Correct.
Ebony and Ivory.
Yes, the one that most famous for people of our generation is the Saturday Night Live parody where Frank Sinatra does it, and it doesn't hold up well because you are black and I am white. You are blind as a bat and I have sight. And I won't do the rest of it because it really doesn't stand up well.
Mm.
But and I can't remember, McCartney and Michael Jackson was
The Doggone Girl Is Mine.
The Girl Is Mine.
The Girl Is Mine.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Let's see what else we got. There's always a Travolta. Travolta and Olivia Newton-John.
Does that count? That was a movie soundtrack.
That's a man singing with a woman. Technically speaking, we look to the judges and they're like, they shrug their shoulders. Yeah. And we're like, I mean, it's a duet.
Yeah.
Sure, it's not really within the spirit of the game, but we'll give you a duet point.
The one that I want.
Yes. And then one other one that is relevant again to our folks, and we've talked about a little bit on the show. Do you remember a special song when Bill Clinton was inaugurated in 1992?
Oh man, I'm going to kick myself for not being able to just rattle it off.
Featuring the lead singer of REM, Michael Stipe.
Michael Stipe and I have no idea.
Natalie Merchant from the 10,000 Maniacs.
Wow,
they did a song for the Clinton inaugural, that was a little one-off that a lot of folks my age remember. Perhaps included, perhaps not. And then technically, I think we have to acknowledge also a very important duet, although I think they were in a band together, so it doesn't count. But all the Glenn Hansard, Nikita Ergilova songs from the Once soundtrack.
Definitely. That soundtrack is still a favorite of mine.
Right. Which also done better by Jason Sudeikis and Will Forte in the Last Man on Earth deal, where they do an entire episode where they keep singing that song earnestly to each other's faces. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
Games that never amount to more than they're meant will play themselves out. Take their sinking boat and point it home. We've still got time.
Technically part of the same band, I guess you could say, but also not really a band, because Damien Rice did a lot of work with his, I think you said it was his wife?
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't think they were ever officially a couple, him and Lisa Hannigan.
Yeah.
I think there were always rumors, not to quote a Fleetwood Mac album, there was always rumors, which happens a lot when you, I mean, it happened with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, right?
Indeed. Like, oh, yeah.
Whenever you,
well, I mean, did
whenever
you see the way they stared into each other's eyes?
Whenever you see that chemistry.
And that's actually another good
collaborate
duo.
Together. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But whenever people collaborate together like that and, you know, they're touring and all, there's always the rumors of it. Yeah. But I don't think Damien and Lisa were ever a thing.
Okay. Well, they do some songs together that I enjoy thoroughly.
Yeah, absolutely. I got one other for you just to see if it's – well, actually, sorry, I have two others. One is, again, covered extensively on the show. Probably we've even talked about it, but Ben Folds' Regina Spektor.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You don't know me? Yeah.
Yes.
That is a great one. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then if I say the word candy to you, can you remember that song and who – did that song together?
No.
Candy, candy, candy. Oh, I can't let you go.
Scott sounds like Neil Diamond.
Well, that's because I'm not very good at singing. That part is done by Iggy Pop.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then I definitely cannot do the female singer of it, but you might know her from Rome if you want to.
Oh, wow. Or, the B-52s person.
Yeah, Kate Pearson.
Okay.
They did it. That was the one Iggy Pop song I really know at all, and it's not really an Iggy Pop song. Well, there is a little bit of Method to Madness because we does sound like we're just two white guys randomly talking about duet songs, and that might have been the case. But, you know, if you got a little bit of enjoyment out of that, that's great. But somebody came up with the idea of putting Billy Joe and Nora together 11 years ago.
Yeah.
Many people have come up with the ideas of putting various people together. If you could speak into existence the way we have spoken certain things, like a third version of Noah Kahan's Unceasing Stick Season album, or a new episode of Scott and Scott, who would you... No barriers in history. You're allowed to revive people from the dead if you need to.
Hmm.
You got a good duet you'd pitch out there for T-Bone Burnett to decide he should make?
I mean, the one that jumps immediately to mind for me would be pairing Billie Eilish with somebody like Paul Simon or a James Taylor or something like that.
Gotcha.
Somebody that's sort of a folksy singer-songwriter paired with her. Mm-hmm. I just – that idea intrigues me. I really want to put her with somebody who can sing because I've seen her – like I've seen some TikTok videos of her doing songs with like Dave Grohl. And, you know, it's fun to see Dave Grohl and Billie Eilish together. Dave Grohl has a high amount of respect for her and likes her stuff and so forth. And so the fact that he came on stage and performed with her is cool, but it was sort of phonically jarring.
Yeah, I was going to say that's your idea, I think, is one worth chasing because it actually sort of flips the tradition, right? Because I think I slavishly, when I think of a male-female duet, I obviously gravitate towards the male-sounding voice is going to be the bassier voice, and the female-sounding voice is going to be more like a soprano or an alto.
Yeah.
But with Billie Eilish, she really has the ability to do the deeper sort of gravelly, very, very sexy, husky voice. And so pairing her with a male voice that would be in would a music person say like a higher octave? Is that right? Or higher register? Or what's the
higher
right
register?
Term?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That would be interesting to me.
There is an interesting pairing that has already happened that is sort of kind of along the lines of what you were describing there. You really cannot tell who is singing which part a lot in. I want to make sure I get the title right. It's a duo that it was Nate Ruiz and Pink did a song together.
And is Nate the guy from Fun?
Yes.
Okay.
The lead singer of Fun.
They really should have called that Pink Fun or Fun Pink, although I guess that has some negative possible connotations.
Yeah.
they might get sued by Blackpink for being too close to that if they do Fun Pink.
Yeah. Just Give Me a Reason is the name of the song, Nate Ruiz.
Is that an original or is that a cover?
I think it's an original. I cannot say for sure because when I say things for sure, I end up being very, very wrong.
Gotcha.
But
hasn't stopped us for 26 episodes. Sometimes we come back and acknowledge our wrongness. Sometimes we blow right through our wrongness.
Yeah.
Well, while you're looking, let me give you, I overachieved on this one as I tend to do when I get balled up in my own thoughts. And I have four proposed pairs, but let me start you with the one that I think I want most of all, and both people are alive. Mm. So Ray LaMontagne and Jewel.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I think that would go a little something. No, I'm not going to do what it would go a little something like, but I think that would be a good one. one that would require me to be a bit of a necromancer.
Mm.
Elliot Smith and Fiona Apple.
Okay, I struggle hearing how that one would go.
Okay.
I mean.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Know. They can't all be bangers.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't all be Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow, right? also, how about Kid Rock and a mallet to the face? Could we? That would sound a little like this. All right. Well, another one that requires me to pull somebody from the dead: Jeff Buckley and Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah, but she would have to be doing the shallow persona. Like, she couldn't be doing her real poker face lady sort of setup. Mm-hmm. And then I got one last one. I got one last one. And you mentioned earlier Damien Rice.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to pair Damien Rice with Florence from Florence and the Machine.
Sure.
Are you familiar with them at all?
Absolutely. They did that one song.
They did that one song. But so the thing about that is, I think in the same way you say to me, Elliot Smith, Fiona Apple, hard to do because I don't think they're sonically different enough. Mm-hmm. Although I think that Elliot could hit more of the high notes even if he's a little bit off key and Fiona would sort of the lower. Damien Rice and Florence and the Machine would be like this massive competition for who could hit the highest, most sustained note. So it might reveal that my future as a T-Bone Burnett producer isn't very good. Mm. But those were the four I came up with. Although I was struggling with trying to put Sheryl Crow with somebody. And in my head I was like, you know, if you could bring Tom Petty back from the dead and put Tom Petty and Sheryl Crow together, it'd probably be pretty good. But I think Tom Petty with Stevie Nicks was probably about as good as you could do with the voice types.
You certainly don't wanna there's no need for him to, especially since you would have to raise him from the dead. There's no need for him to do another one. He's got one that was.
Yeah, I think he'd be pretty pissed off if that's why you brought him back. You're like, Tom, it's just for this one song with Sheryl Crow, and he'd be like,
back in the dirt.
I mean, that seems wrong. Can't I at least pair with Taylor Swift so people hear it? Because I'm sure all the Swifties out there are like, oh, it's Taylor Swift with this person, this person, this person, and this person.
Well, I mean, I would love to hear Taylor Swift with any of the people that she collaborated with on, like, for instance, Folklore and Evermore.
Sure.
Any of those guys that she brought in to collaborate with.
What about speaking with, now that you say that, what about you take your Billie Eilish idea and you pair her with Justin Vernon performing as Bon Iver?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that would really get the good register. Anyway, so, hey, scouting types out there, make that happen and kick us a little bit of the zitties, baby. We get a little bit of the return on that investment. We did mention some people that have passed there. In all seriousness, do you remember World Party, the band World Party?
No.
Goodbye Jumbo. That album had the elephant face, like some gas mask sort of stuff on it. World Party's album, Goodbye Jumbo, one of my favorite albums of all time. And I only bring any of that up to say that sadly Carl Wallinger who was the lead singer and the musical inspiration of the band World Party, passed away at 66 earlier this month. Very sad. He had also been in the Waterboys for a little bit before he did World Party. Maybe that'll be my backup recommendation to you if you have heard my.
I have never heard World Party.
World Party's good stuff. But one thing I want to say before we move off the duets topic is this has worked out well because I have held back a male-female pairing of a one-off album that's going to be my listening recommendation to you at the end of this episode. So we will not retread this ground in our next episode, but we will have a fun duet album to talk about. Speaking of fun things to talk about, so the Oscars were after our last episode, and I'm checking. Oppenheimer didn't win all of the awards.
They did not win. Oppenheimer did not win all of the awards. It did win the big one, though.
It did win the big one. That's right. It won.
It won
sound
best picture
editing. No, yes. It also won best picture. And also, in fairness, this is not just your failure. It's my failure because I went on that limb and said American Fiction would somehow win best picture.
Yeah.
And it, of course, didn't.
It did not.
But it did win best adapted screenplay. Which, if I had been allowed to change my predictions, I actually would have gone with Oppenheimer, Best Picture, Fiction, Best Screenplay, but I was locked into my madness.
Yeah, I cannot remember. Did you actually go with Cillian Murphy for?
I did.
You did.
I did. Okay. The only predictions I got wrong were because I stuck with Fiction, I lost on Oppenheimer, and because I stuck with Fiction, I put Oppenheimer into Best Adapted, so I missed those two, and then like everybody else on the planet, I didn't predict Emma Stone was going to win for Poor Things. I predicted that Lily Gladstone would get it, regardless of whether her performance was better than Emma Stone's.
Well, interesting that you should mention that. I actually watched Poor Things this morning.
Oh, you watched it this morning?
Yeah.
Jeez, how are you holding up? Because I watched it two nights before the Oscars. What do you think?
It was not my cup of tea.
No, I hated that movie.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, Emma Stone was fucking fantastic.
Oh yeah, she was. That her performance was phenomenal. Yeah.
And Ruffalo in any other year, Ruffalo I think really could have won over that except for the fact that the juggernaut that was Robert Downey Jr. was always going to win that.
Yeah.
But his performance of that particular character was
It was really, really outside of the box for him. It's not anything that I've seen him do before, which made it very much interesting to watch and fun to watch. I didn't hate the movie. I probably won't ever watch it again, but I didn't hate it. And a lot of that probably is because the performances from Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo were both so good that that alone made me enjoy it, appreciate it, or something.
And also, can we just embrace how smart it is to call it Furious Jumping?
Yeah,
I mean that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, yeah. But the performance that Robert Downey Jr. gave was also very different than most of his performances. He played it very understated and was just sort of all kinds of power in silence that just was really amazing to watch. And I think he was pretty much a shoe-in to win this year, and he did. I was thrilled to death that Billie Eilish and Phineas won for What Was I Made For. I have played that song for anybody who I could force to listen to it. Every time she has performed it live, I watch her live performance at least a few times. So I've watched her. She performed it on Saturday Night Live, and I listened to it when she performed it on Saturday Night Live and was like, if I were the crying type, I would have been crying.
Speaking of live performances, though, Ryan Gosling, I'm just kidding, really nailed it.
I mean, he nailed it. It was great. It was fun to watch. It was not It was not a. I don't like the song.
Yeah. So, no.
You know, it's not like I thought he was. They were robbed for.
No. What I was worried about was that the only reason Eilish wouldn't win is the classic. You have two songs from the same movie nominated, and mm-hmm. so those split the votes in some other. You know, train wreck of a song that shouldn't have been nominated. Like, what was it? Was there one Jean Baptiste performed or whatever?
Yeah.
Although I would have said I didn't like the song, but I could have seen the Killers of the Flower Moon song win just because of how different it is than probably anything ever that's been nominated.
Yeah.
And then we live in a world now where Godzilla has an Oscar.
Indeed.
And Billie Eilish has twice as many as Martin Scorsese.
Yes.
Which is crazy when you think about
it. She is now the youngest double Oscar winner ever.
Yeah.
Nobody younger than her has won two Oscars.
You know, that dog from Anatomy of the Fall might just do it.
I mean, listen, have you watched it?
No, we talked about this on the last episode, and I got in a little trouble in the old household because there's only two people I really interact with pretty frequently outside of work, and they both had been on planes recently, and one of them had told me the story of watching Anatomy of a Fall on a plane, and I insisted it was my wife, to my wife, after she told me that was not true. I was like, are you sure about that? Because I'm pretty sure you told me about it. And I spin out the details, and she's like, no. And then I was just sort of sitting, and then I went, oh, it was Court. It was Court, and on the podcast he told me about this.
Yeah, listen, the dog gives an Oscar-worthy performance.
Yeah, well.
It's
got robbed.
It's actually... It's very impressive and distressing.
He's named after Messi, so you got to expect he's going to perform on the big stage and at the big indeed, times, right? Indeed. You can't be named Messi and not have that happen.
That is true.
Well, you've been doing anything else lately? You've been maybe pursuing some off book recommendations that involve a book?
Yes. So I have been listening to. A book that you recommended to me. I don't think it was on air. I think it was something that you recommended to me off air. But
well, I think that's true. But I think what we might have said on air was I said that if you could only read one horror book when I was talking about a Stephen Graham Jones book or something like that. I said if you could only read one, it would be House of Leaves. But if you could read two, it would be Demon Theory, or something like that. Yeah,
yeah. And I haven't listened to House of Leaves. Maybe I should have gone with that because it turns out I started listening to Demon Theory, and it felt kind of familiar, but I wasn't really sure how familiar it actually was. So I kept listening, and I finally realized that yes, I have indeed heard the book before.
Okay.
It took me about halfway into the book before I really was yes, I remember this part.
Okay.
And so I have heard the book before, and fortunately, I don't know how it ends. I can't remember how it ended, so I'm continuing to listen through it. But
how do they treat footnotes on that audio book recording? Because
I don't know that there have been footnotes.
Okay.
But it's kind of a weird read to read it out loud, because for those people who don't know, it's written like a movie script,
right?
And so it seems especially noticeable up front. So I don't know if it's something that he dropped off as a device, he stopped using it later in the book, but it doesn't seem like everything is script now. It's like when you first start listening to it, you can tell you're listening to someone who's basically reading a movie script almost. And now, with the exception of camera directions, you know, he doesn't name the speaker every time the speaker has a line anymore.
Okay.
So but he'll give camera directions. He'll say, you know, from Egan's perspective, okay, and you know, so you know how you know what you're looking at and so forth. I don't really like the book though, and it is a phenomenon that, unless you are an audiobook listener, regular consumer of audiobooks, it's not a phenomenon that you will be familiar with. But this is a classic case of somebody, basically the narrator, ruining the book for me.
Oh, okay. Thank God, because for a moment there, I was just overwhelmed with horror that once again we were going to have to end the friendship. But so bad book reader ruining a good Stephen Graham Jones book.
Yeah,
Demon Theory is a hell of a book. On the book topic, by the way, while you're looking up what you're looking up and our dueling recommendations, I am almost through with Babel. I have read it all the way to – I've got 92 pages left of it. And I remember asking you, you know, how they handled the footnotes on the audio because it seemed like it would be the thing that they should go, sorry, but as they read the footnote. But, man, I've hated the footnotes in that book.
Mm.
The footnotes in that book have added nothing for me. They have just distracted from it. You know, on a Kindle – you have to press the little asterisk and it brings up the new screen. And the ones that bug me the most is when all it is going to show me is the Mandarin characters for what it is that it's just said. But the book's been very, very good.
And
while we're on Babel, to follow up, unless you, have you found what you wanted to say about who it is?
Well, the guy that – and I don't want to dog him too much, but the actor who he is an actor. Mm-hmm. He also does obviously voice work. His name is Richard Frone.
Don't know him.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right or not, but do you very specific reference here? But do you recall the voice of Ghostface when he's talking through his little voice changer thing?
Yes,
that's what this guy sounds like.
Oh, okay.
And it just grates on my nerves.
Is he doing that for all the parts or just?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Well, that's a shame because I could see why. Because I think I mentioned like. Demon Theory is a horror book that does all the things almost in a way that Scream did for the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have seen that as like a conscious choice for like one of the characters, but to do it for the whole, that's...
Yeah, no, that's apparently just the way his voice sounds.
I wonder if he's the same guy.
I don't know. That's what I was trying to do. I got to figure out if he was in fact the same guy, but he's got one of those sort of horror movie. It's the kind of voice you might hear doing a voiceover on a trailer for a horror movie.
Gotcha.
You know,
what's your favorite scary movie?
Something like that. Yeah. And it's really, really annoying. And it's making the listening
experience bad.
Yeah. But
well, I hate that for you. While we're doing greatest hits, by the way, and on Babel, I do have the follow up on why Babel didn't even get considered for the awards. I don't know if you dug into that at all.
I didn't dig into it.
So it's a real mess of a political situation. But so for the first time, either the first time this year or the first time last year carried over this year, the awards ceremony is going to be held in China. And the powers that be excluded things for consideration that they were worried would be seen poorly by leadership in China. And so that's why Babel did not get included out of fear that the political nature of the contents of the book would anger people in China if it won the award at the ceremony and all that kind of stuff. So that's a little too bad. But
yeah, that's a shame.
But unless they do something horrible with the last 90 or so pages, I'm going to say I like the book, which, you know, that is – pales in comparison to your praise of it, but I liked it. I also still say you should go out there, and if you haven't seen Yellowface, not seen Red, Yellowface, read Yellowface. Well, have you got anything else for the good of the order, sir?
Not that I can think of. We pretty much hit my two things, didn't we?
I mean, sure, absolutely. So I have a recommendation for you that I previewed earlier. It will be a nice blend of things that I think we have talked about, but let me first make sure you haven't already heard it, because if you have and it hasn't come up today, it will be interesting, but it will also mean we're reverting to a backup recommendation. But have you heard an album from 2009 called Breakup by Pete Yorn and Scarlett Johansson?
No.
Did you know that there was an album that involved Scarlett Johansson?
I had no idea that.
Well, that is going to be your listening assignment. Slightly older than the one you gave me. We're going back 14, 15 years now. But give that a listen and be prepared to chat with me next week about it. Well, I would like to thank the Flying Scrub Jays for the use of our theme song, Cyrus Osiris, off of their LP, Love Beneath the Moonlight. Get that wherever you get your physical media, or give them some streams. You know, set your phone up overnight to play on silent and just play that song on a loop. Probably get them a shiny quarter or maybe a half dollar. If you've got any feedback for us of any sort, because we do want you to rate, review, and subscribe the podcast on your favorite platforms, including Apple, because that helps. But if you want to reach out and give us any feedback, got anything wrong today, said anybody was dead that was not dead, although I think we are doing well today on that front so far, you can hit us up on Instagram. We're at Listeners Like You Pod. We're on Blue Sky. Search for us as Listeners Like You. We've got a Facebook page, Listeners Like You. We're still over passively on Twitter at Listeners Like. We have got an email address that is
listenerslikeyou2023@gmail.com.
Yeah. And yeah, feel free to communicate with us, work out. We're heading into year two. And so this becomes the time on Sprockets When We Dance. this is the time where we end the podcast, and all of our loyal lilies out there, which I'm still trying to make that happen. Know that the way we end the podcast is we go to a random podcast generator website and we have it queue up a random podcast for us. And it has again done that. It has given us a podcast called Bad on Paper. And the category of that podcast is books. Court, have you heard of a podcast called Bad on Paper?
No, I have not.
I have never listened to that podcast either. Here's the description. Your new internet besties give you a weekly dose of books, banter, and folks you should be following. Court, does that sound like a podcast you would listen to?
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm kind of that way too. You know, it's a little presumptuous for them to say you're new internet besties, but I understand marketing. You know, it also probably tells me when you say you should be following, they probably are pointed towards, you know, Twitter and stuff like that, which, you know, everybody just needs to get off that platform and move to other stuff. But books, banter, and you know, folks you should be checking out sounds like it's kind of in my oeuvre. And so maybe while you're listening to a breakup, maybe I'll pick out a episode of that podcast and give it a listen and be prepared to come back and chat with us as we start year two of the podcast.
Indeed.
Thank you all for listening. I've been Brian Faunin.
And I will always be Court Winsett.
And we are
Listeners Like You.
So now that we're at the end, thank you all for listening. I've been Brian Faunin.
And I always... I
are you?
I'm
are you
Court.
Sure?
Are
you
sure? Mm-hmm.
You seem less than sure about that.
I'm always Court Winsett.
All right.
I can't remember what I say.
Oh, okay. Well, it's some version of your name.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Brian Faunin.
And I'm Court Winsett.
Or no, I've been... Sorry. Damn it. Well, we know what we have for the back of the podcast, if nothing else.